church are very interested in missions, but I'd like to be, I just don't really have the time right now.
Well, the thing that gets me is we have so many problems here. I don't know why we bother going around the world solving everybody else's problems.
Me? I fainted the sight of a spider. What would I do if I ran into a boa constrictor?
I'm not sure if we're needed in foreign countries anymore. There are enough Christians over there to do the job. I think our main job right now is to pray for them.
Me? Oh, I'm mainly interested in family issues. I figure some people are, you know, involved in music ministry, other people are into missions. You can't be involved with everything at the same time.
Ooh, don't you have to get shot?
It's too late for me to go to the mission field now. That's better for the young folks.
I'm too young. I'll think about missions when I get older.
I want to welcome you to this introductory course on world missions. When I was a young man, I had the privilege of playing on a nationally famous football team. Our varsity football team didn't go to the Rose Bowl. In fact, we had the longest losing streak in the United States. That's what made us famous. In fact, we lost 27 games in a row. Those were the days when college football was dominated by the University of Oklahoma. Bud Wilkinson was the coach, and he introduced the option play and popularized the option play. Now, how does the option play work? The quarterback gets the ball under center, and he begins to move parallel to the line of scrimmage. He looks at the defense. If the defense is moving in toward him, he pitches the ball out to the halfback, and the halfback goes wide around the end. But if the defense is laying back, he keeps the ball himself and runs forward. In other words, he comes to a point where he has an option, and the option is to keep the ball or to pitch the ball. Many people in churches look at missions like the option play. An option is something you can take or you can leave. And there are those who think of the world mission of the church and they say, well, you know, that's all right for some people, but it's not for me. Just like, well, choir is great for some people, but not for me. Youth work is fine for some people, but not for me. Social work is fine for some people, but not for me. I would like to contend in this course that missions is not an option to be considered. It is a command to be obeyed. It's not a peripheral program. It's a principal passion that needs to permeate every program of the church. It's not a sideline. It's the lifeline of the church. C. Peter Wagner, in his book On the Crest of the Wave, has put it very well when he said this: some things in life are optional, and some are not. Wearing shoes is optional, but eating is not. Driving a car is optional, but once you choose the option, driving on the right-hand side of the road, at least here in America, is not. Becoming a Christian is optional, but once you decide to ask Jesus Christ to take control of your life, involvement in world missions is no longer optional. There's a new term that has become increasingly popular and increasingly used in Christian circles to describe this reality of people who understand that the world missionary task of the church is central rather than peripheral, that it's not an option, that it's an essential. And that term is world Christian. Maybe you've heard that term used before. Maybe it's been used by your pastor. Maybe by fellow students in a Christian group. Maybe you've seen it in print. More and more, it is beginning to describe precisely what we're talking about in this course. For instance, just a few years ago, Ted Engstrom, then the head of World Vision, gave a commencement address at Messiah College entitled, Be a Global Christian. Sometimes the term world Christian is used with another synonym, like world-class Christian or global Christian. But it's the term world Christian that's becoming the most popular phrase. You find it in magazine articles, like in Campus Crusade's Worldwide Challenge, where you have a picture of a person whose face is painted with a world map, and then the article, What in the World is a World Christian? Or in publications of mission agencies like Overseas Crusades, Lost and Found. The front cover picture shows a person crawling out of a cardboard box, and the article is entitled, Get Out of Your Box, Be a World Christian. We see it in the publications of evangelistic associations like Billy Graham's Decision Magazine, where there's an article here, Becoming a World Christian, How Do I Start? Some magazines even bear the name World Christian. This is a copy of World Christian magazines. And from articles to magazine names to book titles, first book subtitles, Peter Wagner's book, On the Crest of the Wave, Becoming a World Christian is the subtitle. And then J. Herbert Kane's book, the title, Wanted, World Christians. We even have an encyclopedia published by Oxford Press, edited by David Barrett, World Christian Encyclopedia, and it can be found in many libraries around the country. Well, if we're going to use the term world Christian, we probably need to define it. What is a world Christian? First of all, it's not the same as being a worldly Christian. There's a world of difference between being a worldly Christian and being a world Christian. A worldly Christian is one who accepts the basic message of salvation, but whose lifestyle, priorities, and concerns are molded by self-centered preoccupation. He or she looks to God and the Bible primarily for self-fulfillment. The worldly Christian looks to Scripture for personal blessing, prays mostly for immediate personal needs, and sees the Christian faith as a way to get God on his or her side. A world Christian is different. What's your definition of a world Christian? Mine is this. A world Christian is one whose lifestyle and obedience are compatible with, in cooperation with, and in accord with what God is doing and wants to do in our world. A more classic definition, much more widely used, is one that is given by David Bryant. He says this, A world Christian is a day-to-day disciple for whom Christ's global cause has become the integrating, overriding priority of all that he is for them. Like disciples should, he actively investigates all that his master's Great Commission means, and then he acts on what he learns. Now, the key word in David Bryant's definition is integration. Integration. Integration is the essence of being a world Christian. Integration comes as I learn to wrap my life in Christ around nothing less than his global cause. Integration happens as I take steps day by day to commit all I know of myself to all I know of Christ for the sake of all I know about the world mission of the church. If that's the definition of a world Christian, what are some of the traits, some of the characteristics of a world Christian? I'd like to list six. First, a world Christian knows that God is concerned about world evangelism. A world Christian knows that God is concerned about world evangelism, and consequently, he's growing in his own concern for lost people, which is expressed through active involvement in local evangelism and world missions. The fact that more than 2 billion people have no knowledge of Jesus Christ significantly influences the attitudes and behavior of a world Christian. Second, a world Christian keeps abreast of world events. He's not a Christian imperialist, he's a Christian internationalist. He's concerned about how world events will affect world evangelization. He reads both the Bible and the newspaper, and he relates the two. For instance, how is the expiration of the British lease on the colony of Hong Kong? Hong Kong is going to return to mainland China in 1997. How is that going to affect evangelization, the growth of the church in that part of the world? How's it going to affect the Chinese church? What's going to happen to all the refugees as they leave Hong Kong and go to various parts of the world? What will be the implications for world evangelization? A world Christian recognizes that the impact of North American foreign and economic policies can have on the spread of the gospel, and he or she is concerned about those policies. And then third, a world Christian prays for the spread of the gospel. Prays for the removal of repressive government leaders and for religious freedom. Upholds his brothers and sisters around the world who are suffering for the sake of the gospel. Prays for national Christians who are actively involved in evangelizing their own people. Prays that missionaries will be raised up on every continent of the world to reach unreached peoples. And prays for present missionaries, those his own church supports and those sent out by other churches the world over, that God would strengthen them and use them, and that they would be able to preach the Word of God without fear. And then, fourth, a world Christian is aware of the unique strategies needed to reach today's people. This doesn't mean that an in-depth understanding of all these strategies is necessary, but there ought to be some recognition, some awareness of the significance of Bible translation or shortwave radio or great plans for world evangelization like AD 2000 or the Dawn 2000 movement or the need for urban missions in our increasingly urban planet. Then fifth, a world Christian recognizes that he or she is part of the world community of believers who are jointly responsible for world evangelization. Something very significant happened in the history of Christianity during these past 10 years. White people became a minority of the Christian church. And the center of gravity of Christianity has moved out of Europe and out of North America into Asia, Latin America, and Africa. The church is growing at an astounding rate. 3,500 new congregations come into existence every week. 70,000 people profess faith in Christ every day. We are seeing enormous growth of the church, and most of it is taking place south of the equator. So there's a shift in the center of gravity in Christianity taking place in our day, and there's a tremendous movement taking place in the world which is raising up missionaries who are not Europeans and they're not North Americans, so that by the year 2000, most missionaries in the world will not be from Europe or North America. That doesn't mean the missionary movement isn't growing in North America and in Europe. It is, but it's growing faster in the lands that are to the south of the equator. I like the way J. Herbert Kane has expressed this truth in his book, Wanted World Christians. He says, as a child of the kingdom, the believer can become a world Christian. By calling, he belongs to a universal fellowship, the Christian church. By conviction, he proclaims a universal message, the Christian gospel. By commitment, he owes his allegiance to a universal king, Jesus Christ. By vocation, he is part of a universal movement, the Christian mission. And then finally, a world Christian commits himself to becoming actively involved in reaching the unreached. This may include service in the local church to contribute in some way toward world evangelization. It may involve service within the Christian community in his own homeland to contribute toward world evangelization. Or it may be service as a cross-cultural disciple maker. But the world Christian, in his capacity as a lay or a professional Christian worker, seeks to contribute meaningfully to world evangelization. I like what one Brazilian pastor said, speaking of his congregation. Jesus is Lord of this church. My people have been well trained and are committed to personally sharing their faith, and I'm involving my people in reaching the world for Christ. That's a balanced presentation of what it means to commit oneself to become actively involved in reaching the unreached, both across the street and around the world. These are the traits of a world Christian. What are the types of world Christian? How can we describe the typology of what it means to be a world Christian? I think that one of the most creative ways is a way that was developed by D. Bruce Graham, which speaks of the types of world Christians in terms of the animal kingdom. He calls them beavers, mallards, or eagles. Now, if I were to ask you the question, what characterizes a beaver? What would you all say? Well, obviously, you'd say, oh, they're energetic. Beavers have all kinds of energy. I mean, don't we refer to busy beavers? That's right. Beavers are energetic builders who work in a single locale. World Christian beavers are heavily involved in the church's local responsibilities. They're convinced that, as in the parable of the lost sheep, the task of reaching the unreached people of the world is God's highest priority. They aren't ignorant of what's happening around the world. They talk about world events and their impact on the advance of the gospel. They pray for the world. They give for world evangelization. But their primary focus is on the home front. Their energies are devoted to accomplishing the task at home, to building a base to and from which world Christian mallards can fly. Beavers are what have been called evangelists, local evangelists, and senders. Well, what about the mallards? If I were to ask you about mallards, you'd say, oh, mallards, they're migratory birds. In other words, they're at home at two places. You know, they migrate from the north to the south, and then they migrate back from the south to the north. They have two homes. That's a good description. You see, a mallard's focus of attention is split, just like a missionary's, split between the home, the sending church, and the field. And they live in both places. They migrate, or they leave their home church and their home country, and they go elsewhere to live in the midst of another culture. And they put down roots there. And then after a period of time, they migrate back to their home base. And so we can say that the primary distinctive of their migration is the crossing of boundaries. For the Christian missionary, it's crossing cultural boundaries. There are so many cultures within individual countries that world Christian mallards may remain at home geographically, yet be far removed from their cultural roots. So mallards are what have been traditionally called missionaries. And then there's eagles. If I were to say to you, tell me about an eagle, you'd say, oh, eagles soar at great height, and they have eagle eyes. And so from that great height, they can look out over the landscape, and they can see all that's going on over a broad range. They have sharp eyes. They fly high above their domain, and they have a knowledge of their habitat commensurate with their high-flying perspective. So world Christian eagles have a broader view of things than either mallards or beavers. And world Christian eagles are restless within their own culture. Their attention and activity aren't so narrowly focused as is the attention and activity of their friends, the beavers, for instance. And yet, they don't migrate to work in other cultures like the mallards do. Instead, they help both the beavers and the mallards by acquiring the broadest possible perspective on what's happening around the world, and then passing on their findings to both the beavers and the mallards. World Christian eagles are the information gatherers. They are the information disseminators of the mission world. They're often the communication links between the beavers and the mallards. They help the mallards know what the beavers are doing and thinking, and they help the beavers know what the mallards are involved in doing. Eagles are the mission educators, the mission leaders, the mission recruiters, the mobilizers, the strategizers. Now notice one thing here. The differences between world Christian beavers and mallards and eagles don't arise because of a difference in their spirituality. It's not as if one animal is busier or more important or more spiritual than the other. But each one has been equipped by his or her creator to carry out his or her part of the larger task. What are you? What role will you play in world evangelization? And so those are the types of a world Christian. But what about examples of world Christians? I have two examples I'd like to share with you. One of those is someone who's well known. You'll recognize this person. Another, you probably never heard of. George Verwer is the founder and president of Operation Mobilization, a missions agency that has sent thousands of missionaries to all parts of the world. George is so much of a world Christian, he even wears a world Christian jacket. Listen as he shares how God gave him a heart for the world.
It's amazing. Before my conversion, in a liberal church that hardly even preached the gospel, there was some minimal exposure to missionaries. A missionary came back from India whose last name was the same as my town, Miss Wyckoff. I'm from Wyckoff, New Jersey. I heard about India. There were seeds subconsciously sown in Sunday school, in church, in other ways that I can hardly remember, though my family wasn't basically a committed Christian family. Then I was converted through a Billy Graham meeting in New York City, and it seems that almost in my conversion, there was a sense of destiny, of purpose. I must win men to Jesus Christ. Somewhere I was already thinking about other nations, because before my conversion I was raising money showing films of the Pocket Testament League to get people to give gospels for everybody in the world. I realized before my conversion the Bible was the greatest book in the world. Everybody needs to have one. Now after my conversion things happened very quickly. I was hungry. I wanted to know God. I wanted to know God's will. Billy Graham was having campaigns overseas. I started to get missionary literature. After about 1 or 2 years, I got to my first missions conference, which was actually Chattanooga, Tennessee. Just blew my mind. And soon, within a couple of years after my conversion, that's all I basically thought about almost, day and night, together with winning people to Christ right where I was. To mobilize people, to get others excited, I soon, at 19 years of age, headed for Mexico because I heard people didn't have the Bible there. Most people in America at least had a Bible, though I knew there were great needs here, especially working in New York City. And then I met missionaries. I met Wycliffe missionaries in Mexico. It just was one rapid series of exposures, of mind-bending challenges that were coming from many sides. Now, that was linked to the fact I was hungry to know God. I was desperate to get God's message out of His Word. If people aren't taking the initiative, I was an initiator. I was looking, pushing, seeking, phoning. If people are passive, so many evangelicals are really even jellyfish. They're just sort of floating with the tide. They're not aggressive enough. I may be too aggressive. The Lord has had to balance me and break me, teach me to be a little more laid back, a little mellow. My wife said some years ago, you know, just looking at me made her feel tired. I could have blown my marriage apart. But the average person is not taking the initiative enough. He's not writing letters. He's not phoning. He's not kicking. He's an evangelical wimp. And it's a gangrene in the Church of Jesus Christ today. Characters like me, they need to read Grace Awakening. They need to read Eugenia Price's book, No Easy Answers, Yancey's book, Disappointment with God. Maybe I need to write a book, How to Slow Down in the Fast Lane. But most people are not in that camp.
You heard from George Verwer. Now I'd like to tell you about another world Christian who you probably never heard of. His name is Mr. Horst. We met his daughter, Friederun, in Germany about 4 years ago. Anne and I were in Germany, and I was lecturing at a school of missions on the subject of missiology. It just happened that there was a Easter break that they hadn't thought of. And here we were at this school, and it was time for Easter break, and they really hadn't made any arrangements for what to do with us. We thought, well, we'll stay in a room and maybe we'll get some bread and just walk around the town for these few days, because everything was closed up, the students were leaving. And finally, one person had compassion on us. Her name was Frieda Rue, and she was the cook. She said, why don't you come home with me for Easter? And so, along with another student, we went to her home, about a four-hour drive into Bavaria. And we met her folks. They were farmers. They lived in a large home that was sufficient for her family of eight, plus mother and father, four brothers and four sisters. As we walked in this house, I was astounded to see that in the hall, the wall was papered with a world map. The wall was world map wallpaper. And even the cities and the language was in English. And so I talked to Mr. Horsch and I asked him, well, why this wallpaper? He said, well, I want our children to be reminded of the world as a whole. And he said, and I got English language wallpaper because that way they can learn the names of the countries and the cities and the provinces in English, because that's become the world language. Oh. And I walked in the next room, and here was a basket full of postage stamps. I said, oh, you're stamp collectors. No, we don't collect stamps at all. But we save postage stamps and soak them, and then we send them to mission agencies. We sell them to collectors and use the money for missions. Well, by that time, it was time to eat. We sat down, and in German Christian homes, it's the custom to pray both before and after the meal rather than simply before the meal, as we do in the United States. And at least one of these meals, they pray for missionaries. We began to look at the toys. We discovered that the toys were puzzles made of wood with maps of the world, maps of Germany, maps of the world, maps of the United States. And it wasn't surprising to discover that of their children, all of them who weren't still on the farm were involved in ministry serving other people. Then we discovered that Mr. Horst himself dedicates his winters, when he's not working around the farm, to going to Central Africa to help missionaries with agricultural work. He invests his life in that way. Wasn't surprising for us to hear about a year later that Frieda Rune, the cook, resigned in order to go to a Bible college in Germany in order that she might prepare for missionary service. Mr. Horsch was a person with limited formal education, but a person who was committed himself and family to being a world Christian. World Christians are not average Christians, but they're normal Christians. To be a world Christian is the norm that God has for us. Be a world Christian so that you can be a part of God's global plan.